Well, it sure is with our special guest tonight, John Rhodes. By the way, he's got a DVD that's called Whatever Happened to Cow Number 62. I've got to ask him about that. We're going to talk about a code, a special code he'll explain in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Okay, Mr. Crypto Hunter, Mr. Rhodes.
Yes,
what
sir.
Is this code that you're talking about?
Well, this is something that has been an area of research I've been investigating for a number of years, and it's come to a point of where I really don't want to hold on to it for any more length of time. I want to basically let everybody know what I'm looking at here and then put a call out to everybody, like to open source this information to see what else can be found, because I feel like I'm barely scratching the surface here. You know, George, part of what I do is investigating, you know, reptilian humanoid contacts and other things like that is trying to find out what is being communicated to people. We have these theories about what the crop circles mean. We have sometimes people who are shown screens of how we're polluting the world, and we know the message of that contact perhaps is to go back and encourage everybody to take care of our planet. So we know some of the messages are quite obvious, but others sometimes are not. And it turns out that two UFO alien encounters that I'm going to be talking about tonight has actually led me to believe that there exists a code that's embedded within all of our ground, all of our reality here on Earth, one that's permeating every part of society, almost all religions, and it seems to be one that is actually it encompasses a unit of totality, and it's regarding what is the number 64.
The number 64.
Right. All right. It is regarding the number 64. And when I started looking into the number 64, and of course the game of chess and the mysteries of the game of chess and its relationship to the sacred 8-byte grid of 64, it became quite apparent to me that 64 is related to significant patterns that are found in the fundamental building blocks of our reality. And it seems to be a number that's just about connected to just about everything from the I Ching and the 64 condoms of DNA that make up all of life on Earth to the magical square of Mercury, time wave cycles, and much, much more. It's just all over the place. And when I started looking into this and figuring out what are the 64 hexagrams of the I Ching, for example, and other 64-based patterns do that relate so well to the 64 codes or condoms necessary for the template of life, I was thinking, where is the connection? How is it that the template of life, the 64 codes or genetic combinations that we can get that makes up all the template of life, how is it related to these other patterns that relate to 64? And it turns out that these patterns are not so much things that we've adopted because we just made them up. They're inherent to nature and life all around us. For example, the pattern that cells use to divide in biology perfectly matches the fundamental structure of the fabric of the space that it's dividing in. And what this means is when 64 is a pattern or a formula or a sequence of numbers that's based on what we call exponential increase.
Is it 8x8, basically?
Actually, it is. It is 8x8. It is the chessboard. The chessboard is comprised of two sets of 32 squares, making 64 squares. And the chessboard is more than just a chessboard. The chessboard is a metaphysical, magical object that looks at, from a mundane point of view, it looks like an ordinary game, but actually it's quite ancient, and it is connected to so many different things. That it's unimaginable to believe that perhaps, you know, that some people would come away saying that chess was given to them by the gods. And as a matter of fact, it looks like some people we're going to talk about tonight actually have said that. These patterns, you know, like the 64 pattern that we're going to talk about, can be demonstrated to link into both the fractal nature of the microcosm and the macrocosm. In other words, as things are above, they are so below, like a fractal. And this 64 fractal seems to fit everywhere. For example, we even have it in computing. And the 64 fractal for the 8x8 board is 8x8 is 64 squares. And now we have 8-bit computing, for example. the first computer that was given to us was a Commodore 64. So all of the artificial life on Earth is based on 64-bit or 8-bit computing, and it builds the fundamental structures upon which everything that we're using for technology is based. Two things I want to share with you that kind of got me on the journey to figuring out what was going on here with this code that's embedded into life.
And you need to explain to us why this code.
Why this code? Yes, I will. You know, one of the things is in 1979, you know, I shared an account with you where somebody had said that this gentleman by the name of Tal had said he had met a reptoid at the foot of his bed.
Right.
Now, during this encounter, he was shown a geometric form that looked like it was plasma. It was colorful. It appeared in the air between the reptoid and him, and he felt as if it came from the reptoid. And this geometric rotating structure that was really beautiful and rotating, the internal structure was rotating at different rates, came to him and entered his head, and he could feel something enter his head. And after this, he had this explosion of type of realization. He was shown things like the cosmic unfolding of the universe, all these things where he didn't really know what was going on. But the overall encounter were two things. He came away with this idea that somehow 64 fit into things, but he could not understand it. And the second thing was is that the only words that the reptoids clearly communicated with him was, "All is light." And that's what the reptoid told him before it disappeared. Now, I want to take you to a case of another gentleman. And this gentleman is known in the field of international chess. And when we were looking into this thing about 64 and trying to figure out what 64 meant to Tal, because, of course, I'm trying to sit here saying, why did this being infuse in Tal this idea of 64? Well, over the years we looked at this, suddenly there was this case that came up of the former president of Kalmykia, north of the Caspian Sea. His name was Kersen Nikolayevich Illuminov.
Pronounce that again.
Yes, Kersen Nikolayevich Illuminov.
Nobody would know who he was. You could say anything you want.
Kersen, we'll call him.
All right.
Now he was the former president of Kalmykia, and which is a state that's under the Russian Federation. And he said that in 1997, he was visited by aliens, and they abducted him. Now, his alien contact informed him that the chessboard was connected to the Cosmos, and it was a key for us to use.
Huh.
See, now, and he's not getting this, but what he's not getting this as a message, but what he's getting is when he comes out of his encounter, he starts making statements such as, quote, "Each year, archaeologists find evidence of chess in America, India, Japan, China, played under the same rules from a time without planes or the internet. Look at the chessboard of 64 squares, and our cells are made of 64 pieces. All of this shows that chess comes from either God or the UFOs." Now,
I never even thought of that.
Yeah, well, now he's thinking this. He's trying to figure out what's going on here. They came to me. They gave me information. He's trying to simulate some of the information into normal thinking and words that he can put across. But you can see he's absolutely enthused with this idea that chess has this background to it that is not exactly modern, but is more ancient. And more so, it may not have come from human beings originally, the idea of the game of chess. Now, when Kersen had this meeting with the aliens, you know, there were oppositional leaders in Russian parliamentary and wanted the president at that time, Medvedev, to turn around and say that this guy Kersen may have been revealing secret state information to the aliens. They were very upset that the aliens would contact him and not the Kremlin. And you got to wonder, why would they contact this guy instead of the Kremlin? I mean, okay, He's president of the World Chess Federation. His country is the only Buddhist nation throughout the entire Federation of the Russian Republic. And so, Russian Federation, sorry. And then, so you're saying, well, why did they contact him? Now, when I started putting the idea of Tal and and his contact together, recognizing that the chessboard does have 64 squares, and therefore it is related and counterwise. I mean, it's a parallel. You have to investigate. It started revealing something that started opening a doorway. Really, I started looking around going, oh, my God, there's 64s everywhere, and they're trying to hide it. And why is that? It's because there's something secret about this idea of 64.
Well, to me, a code means something that they're hiding. That's
right.
That's what a code is.
Right. I mean, look, a long time ago, somebody had noticed, it must have been a long time ago, for example, mitosis. This is the division of cells in the human body. It goes on a doubling. And the formula of the 64 code is this. Whereas in the golden mean, we're talking about the scale of the golden mean, which is the Fibonacci series. Sorry,
It's getting a little late for you, John. I got to wake you up.
Okay. Yes. 1, 1, 1, 2, 3. Every number is a combination of the preceding two numbers, and that's the formula of the Fibonacci. Whereas in this one, it's 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, and 64.
That's a chessboard.
And that's all it is. Okay. This is just a simple thing. And what it is this is called exponential increase. It means it's a point of doubling. But
all right, before you get too far here, because you're losing me.
Okay.
What do you think the code means?
Well, the code means once you get to 64, it means that there's a unit of completion. In other words, a full life. And as I'm going to talk and share with you tonight, I'm going to show and share examples of how people have used this to demonstrate a form of completion, a form of foundation. It's more than just when your life is complete, you're 64 years old. There's far more to that, and that's what I want to share with you tonight.
I'm a little lost.
Okay. For example, mitosis. 64s are noticing mitosis because they go, when cell division, one cell becomes two, two cells become four, four cells become eight, eight cells become 16, 16 cells become 32, 32 doubles to 64, 64 doubles to 128.
That's all well and good. What does that mean? So
right.
What?
Okay. So what we have here is we have a formula based on doubling. And this formula exists in biology with cells, even for sperm, for example. It takes exactly 64 days for a sperm to form. From the first time it's the first cell to the last time when it becomes independent as a sperm, it's 64 days.
All right. So somewhere along the line, 64 is significant.
Absolutely.
But again, so what? I haven't heard the kicker from you yet.
Well, the point here is that when you start taking these ancient systems of knowledge and religious symbol knowledge, and you start seeing that they all share the same code and that they all overlay each other, it means there's something significant in there that humans have recognized and that they're using to benefit them. And in this case, people have been using this to benefit them in different ways. For example, in India, there's a mandala. They have their ancient religion of Hinduism says that when you construct buildings, if you're a normal person, you should construct buildings on a 9x9 grid. But if you're in religion, you're into yoga or yogi, or you're into government, your home's to be built on an 8x8 grid of 64, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
Is it stronger, better for energy? What does it do?
Yes, it's the feng shui of the entire thing. You're basically living on 64 squares, and because this unit of 64, once you knew the secret behind it, it starts actually empowering you personally in your life. And it's no accident why Queen Victoria reigned for 62 years. It's no 64 years. It's no accident why Queen Elizabeth II is starting to hand over the power to Prince Charles, because in 2016 it'll be her 64th year. I predict that'll be the year she hands over power to Charles. So you start seeing these 64s all around the place, and you go, what is it? Everybody's looking at this 64 in ancient times. Everybody was coding around it. But it seems like this has been just left to us as the lyrics of a song instead of what it's all about.
So you're saying, though, we should use this, and how?
Well, you should use it just as the ancients did. Some people used it as a form of divination in ancient times, like with the I Ching. You're talking about 64 separate combinations that all together become more or less an example or an advisement to how you should be operating your life at any given moment. And with the idea of things doubling on itself, at certain significant points during your life, if 60, for example, if 64 is considered retirement, that means 32 is mid-age, and that means that, you know, 16 is rights of the consent and being at an age of puberty, and then 8 and younger than that. So you have these stages in your life where you could say, okay, my child, when they're going through this, at exactly 32 years, I'm going to say that's half my life. I want one. What do I want completed by that time? Because after that point, I've got exactly a doubling of 60, a doubling of that to reach the point of retirement. You know, the state of Israel, for example, in recognizing that the Catholics have for a long time, they used to put churches on top of ancient cave systems that used to house the rituals of the indigenous Indians. And so they would find PowerPoints and they would place their church on them to have everybody come to the church. It's the same thing with this regarding the 64, because if you look even back at the time of Israel, Israel was established in 1948. And so that means at 2012, it would have reached its 64th anniversary. It coincided with the great expectations that most of us had at that time of some sort of a magnificent event that would take place, or at least act as some sort of a timeline in which the future now begins.
Are you saying that by using this number, 64, that it is supposed to give you some kind of mystical powers? What does it do?
Well, I feel that when you start using it and you start recognizing it and seeing how embedded it is throughout our society, you start realizing that it's something where you could use. I mean, for example, if somebody wanted to enrich their lives through gambling, they might figure out some way to use a doubling of the sequence to help them in a gambling method of some sort. If you wanted to turn around and use it as a form of recognizing how to... For example, with meditation, okay, the navel plexus is considered a plexus that a lotus that has 64 upright tipped petals on a ruby red drop. Now, when you're thinking of how does 64 work, that means that okay, there's something about the solar plexus and 64 that the ancients recognized, and since it's embedded in all these other systems, let's focus on that navel area and focus on the idea of 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, because if you do, your mental work there is going to start becoming in sympathetic resonance with all of nature within you, because that code is actually embedded into your own cells.
How do you use it, though, in your day-to-day living in order to make things better for you?
Well, I think it's a matter of looking at the where 64s are, and looking at examples of them, and then finding out what are the ancient peoples or what are the ancient sages trying to tell us that it's associated with the number 64, and look at what they're trying to tell us, because some of those lessons or those teachings are fundamental things that we should perhaps know in order to activate our soul to its totality.
All right, John, let's tuck away 64 for a moment, and we're going to come back in just a second and talk more about cryptos. John's website, by the way, reptoids.com. Simple as that. Ours, coasttocoastam.com, and like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter by going way up to the far right-hand corner of our homepage and click away. And also, don't forget to grab our free apps for your iPhone or your Android system. That, too, you can grab out of the Coast to Coast store. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your phone calls next hour with John Rhodes as we talk about what's happening in Dulce, New Mexico, reptoids. What about Thunderbirds and Bigfoot? Next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Rhodes with us. We're going to get into some creatures. John, I didn't want to leave you with the impression that this number was way over everybody's head, but there is a purpose for it. People can use it. How do you use it in your everyday life?
Well, again, I would say that use the number by going out there and doing the research and putting it on the internet and finding out what type of disciplines that it has connections to it, and then finding out what those disciplines are trying to share with you and follow along those disciplines.
And when you do that, will it change your life for the better?
Well, I don't know. It's like, well, when you read a book like the Quran or the Bible, does it change your life for the better? I think what happens is your need to follow some sort of a target or goal, no matter what it is, leads you on a path of discovering many different things. And when you start looking into 64, you start looking into not only how the nature of the universe is connected with the number, but also you start learning a vast area of disciplines and learning things that I believe enhance your spiritual life.
It's like a revelation will open up for people?
I do believe that. And like I said, this is like an open source thing. This is where we're starting to come find this out and make these connections. I would appeal to everybody out there who might feel that they can contribute in some way to enlightening everybody on 64 or what it might be pertaining to in any fields that they know, to just come forward and share it, because I feel that it's something important we need to look at.
Your DVD, Whatever Happened to Cow Number 62, explain that one for us.
Well, I had originally produced a DVD that was a very limited sales based on the 2006 cattle mutilation up in DePuyer, Montana. And that cattle mutilation investigation, along with Sheriff Tom Kuka, that's the county sheriff up there that we did, the investigation itself was regarding a mutilated cow, but then it was also connected to two more mutilations that happened the next year in 2007, because actually I realized through these cattle mutilations that they were actually pointing out environmental issues, and I really wasn't expecting that. I was expecting something a lot more horrifying or alien-connected, but when I started realizing this was an environmental issue that they were trying to point out, it's at that same course of research led me to realize that, or find out that ever since 1979 in New Mexico, in Albuquerque, where former Senator Harrison Schmidt had actually convened an investigation regarding animal mutilations, at that time the inner core of the research said it was all environmental related, but yet that message seems to have been lost with the conversation regarding animal mutilations over the years. Perhaps it's not as tasty as other issues, because it has to do with food chain and other things like that. You know, I spoke to the gentleman, I forget his name, that was on Oprah Winfrey regarding beef, and he made the comment, told her something about beef, and she said, I'd never eat beef again. And, of course, a large lawsuit erupted from that, from the beef industry.
Oh, I remember that.
And he told me, he said, John, because he knew of my research regarding doing this.
Was that Howard Lyman?
I think it was, yes. And he said, John, he said, just keep in mind, even though we won in court over years, it cost us a lot of money. He says that George Bush passed it, that if you start saying anything that's going to make the American people feel uncomfortable about their food chain, that you can be held for terrorism.
Yeah.
Okay, so that pretty much kills any kind of research that's going to point out things to do with environmental concerns, because if it's connected with the food chain, animal operations, feeding lots and stuff like that, and where's the nitrogen going, where's all this stuff coming from, is it entering the water table, and all these questions, it's really harmful economically to a lot of states, and for that very reason, that's why they don't get a lot of state support.
John, you've covered creatures large and small, mm-hmm. and there are two creatures out there that have fascinated me since I was a kid. One, of course, is Bigfoot. The other, the Thunderbirds that we hear so many stories about. Have you looked at those two as part of your crypto repertoire?
Yes. As far as the Bigfoot reports, when I hear reports of people hearing some sort of unusual bipedal hominid or something like that, I want to, show up and find out what's going on, at least research, from other sources about the case to see what I can find out. Only because if I'm out in the woods and finding out where creatures like Bigfoot would be, then I'm bound to run into perhaps somebody that's met a reptilian. And some of the reports regarding Bigfoot may be actual misidentifications and may be actual reptilian humanoids. That may be the case, for example, in Bishopville, South Carolina, where you have these people saying, you know, the lieutenant colonel that saw one running alongside his car, he said it was half man, half dinosaur. Christopher Davis, the young boy originally had the encounter back in 1988 that drew national attention with the reptilian humanoid, he drew the picture, and it was 7 foot tall. It had three fingers. It had no skin. He said it had scales. Yet at the same time, we get people showing up down there, listening to Truesdale. I talked to him last week, and he's not doing very well health-wise, and I would hope that everybody put a small prayer out there for him. His wife, Betty, passed along like a year or two ago, and ever since then, it's been downhill for Liston. They were just like left shoe, right shoe.
Yeah. That happens. That
a really happens. Wonderful couple, you know. But anyway, Liston was talking about the case in which here you have both of them out there talking about reptile men, but then we have people showing up saying, well, we think this is a Bigfoot because people have heard in the same area encounters with large beings that had some sort of fur. Now, I would propose perhaps that if you're an animal that you know you're being sought after because you're a walking snake man, then perhaps you might want to wear a fur coat so somebody from a distance just thinks you're a bear, okay? And the other thing, too, is that since they're on the surface of the Earth, we don't know how well they are adapted to the environment as far as their body temperature, so they could be wearing something just like a fur coat like any kind of other person would. And just to think that, you know, we don't have some of them, they're not all just of the same type of levels of intelligence. There's some that are very primitive, and they have their own types of intelligence in the given environments they are, but otherwise you would consider them somewhat primitive compared to the others that are perhaps flying or operating the saucer craft or in underground bases along with our government.
Some people, John, have said that they may be dimensional. I tend to think they're more physical. How about you?
You know, again, it gets to this thing about they're coming from our mind, okay? They're coming from another place. We don't know where that is. And then they're physical ones. I feel personally that there are physical ones and that there are others that may, just like be human ghosts, we may be perceiving them as alien ghosts. And perhaps as human ghosts might go on to some other dimension to exist. So on the other dimension, will other beings perhaps exist? Who's to say we have a separate heaven, for example, or an afterlife than all these other intelligent creatures around us? Who's to say that you are reincarnated only into a human soul? Do we come back as a different? Could you come back as a small gray? Could you come back as a reptilian? Or could that reptilian be you in the future, moving through time to interface with yourself, since according to most of the ancient metaphysical works, the only thing that really truly exists is the here and now.
Have you ever heard of any reports of Bigfoot harming someone?
Well, I've heard of them throwing rocks.
Maybe that's just to get their attention.
Well, you know, if I didn't want something around my neighborhood, I might want to throw some rocks at it too.
Yeah.
You know, this is their neighborhood.
Go away, right?
Right, right. This is go away. What do you want? Especially if they see anybody armed, because I'm sure that they may have communicated amongst them some sort of distrust of man because they've spotted a man killing a deer or something like that. So they know that these guys running around their ATVs or on horseback, like Patterson, you know, they're obviously armed, so stay away from them. You know, so, The Bigfoot out there and the reptilian humanoid out there, remember, in physical size and shape, they're very similar. The reptoid's just more muscular, but even the head has a little bit of a back-sloping conical shape to it. And this is what brings up this whole thing and conversation now about the elongated skulls, because these elongated skulls do actually appear to be connected to the presence of ancient reptilian humanoids on Earth and how people viewed them. And because of the shapes of their skulls, after they left the surface of the Earth, there were some people that were truly hybrids that had skulls like that, I believe. But there were others that, even when the hybrids started dying out, there was this memory of these serpent beings on Earth that interfaced with us. And people would then historically try tree panning or skull binding their children to appear like the reptilian humanoids. But we also know that they say that by even binding the head and putting pressure on the back of the head like that, even if it's normal cranial design like with reptilian humanoid, it might exert some pressure on the pineal gland and actually start activating it. So this may have led to increased activation of psychic abilities.
I wish our old friend Lloyd Pye would have lived long enough to see his Star Child project come to fruition, you know?
Well, you know, I hope that all of us get to see some of the efforts of our lives come to fruition. I mean, I look at somebody like John Mack, who contributed so greatly to establishing some sort of credibility with the abduction scenario, just like, you know, our other good friend did that died just recently.
Roger Lear.
These guys, you know, here we're one day going to say, okay, aliens exist. And you know what? Everybody's going to be so captivated with the idea of wondering what the new aliens are like and everything that they're going to forget that so many people gave their lives to this study. And, you know, sure, I could have gone off and studied the sciences and made some sort of a great six-figure income on government grants. I could have gotten some of that government welfare for looking at a star some 3 billion miles away that's not going to affect anybody live on Earth ever, except that some guy that's going to know he saw it. Is that worth $1 trillion? You know, so that's government welfare to me. I could have gone on all that, but I had this thing about uncovering things. You know, George, I'll tell you a story. My first conspiracy was when I was in kindergarten. It was Easter, and I heard Easter Bunny was going to visit, and I was so excited. All the kids were so excited, and I had to go to the bathroom, but I went to the bathroom. When I came out, I saw the guy that ran the kindergarten, and he was in a bunny suit, and gosh darn it, he had his head off. And I could see it was him. And I went, whoa, wait a minute. What? And I started screaming, and I ran into the other room where the kids were, and I said, it's not an Easter Bunny. And my gosh, you should have seen all these parents react, you know.
Shut that kid up, right?
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, I was there to uncover the mystery. Boy, I had discovered the actual answer to it all. But, you know,
I bet you'd be fun at the North Pole, too.
Where's Santa? You know, in my life, I personally had such a different type of a life. I didn't live in the United States with the average school going through the whole school system like we did. And I lived in areas where there was turmoil. So when I came back to the United States, it was hard for me to really fit into having an expectation of doing anything that was going to be kind of normal. So the idea of going from theater into this, starting to get into the sciences and then finally into this field, it was a perfect blend because at least the early experiences, like, you know, I had a talking part on Miami Vice and little things like that. And, you know, I used to know a lot of people in New York. That kind of thing helped me become secure in being able to relate this information because there is so much information. And you know, there's a lot of books out there that are sitting on shelves, but nobody's out there talking about what's in them.
No, not at all. Thunderbirds, I want to take a few minutes to tap your brain about that. These large birds that some people reportedly see, are they prehistoric? Are they pterodactyls? Are they condors? What the heck are they, John?
Well, it may be that they could be some form of a life that has found some ecological niche in which maybe like some of the small insect life, they go into dormant stages and every once in a while come out. And come alive and fly around and get a few things to eat. Hopefully not not your dog or your child or anything else like that, or your horse. I could see that happening. I wouldn't say that's impossible, you know. The idea that they could be slipping through interdimensional doorways has also kind of appealed to me, which is that there have been cases recorded historically in which people have been walking along and then suddenly the air felt electrified and crackling and they would be moving forward in their walk and all of a sudden, this was two teachers, this is one case in particular, two teachers in France, they were on a walk, the air started crackling, something was different, they could smell something and then all of a sudden they come upon a scene off to the side of the road where people are in period costumes. They think there must be a movie being made or some big event taking place, and they continue walking. And when they come back the other way, they don't see anybody there at all.
Huh.
And they go, what happened to everybody? And it was like, what? Well, wasn't there a big to-do here, a big event? And they go, no, this field's been empty for years. And they go, oh, well, that's not possible. My friend and I saw and interacted with people even. We spoke with them while we were walking through here. And interestingly enough, they said afterwards that when they were walking along, they felt that crackling in the air, and that smell smelled like a lightning storm.
Yeah.
That smells like ozone.
Yeah, you can smell that and feel it, too.
Right. So there might be something electromagnetically happening to that region in space-time, that field or whatever, for whatever reasons, that actually allowed that to take place. We can't say that's impossible from happening randomly, where in ancient times, perhaps, all of a sudden, the pterodactyl's flying along.
Yeah.
It's still flying along. It just doesn't realize it's now millions of years
right.
in the future. It's still flying along, and all of a sudden, it's back where it came from.
Well, you know, there was a report of a woman in Illinois whose little boy was being picked up by one of these large birds, and she went and whapped the thing with a broom, and it dropped him, and he was okay. I mean, that's scary.
I've seen that. I've seen that, but I think that was something that may have been said was done through editing on the Internet. But it's entirely possible for things like that to take place, because from that animal's point of view, it's just another smaller animal. It wouldn't think, I'm going to go down there and terrorize that thing, that little thing.
Ancient Native American myth in Alton, Illinois. They've got the painted there on the bluffs,
mm-hmm.
a picture of a bird. They call it the Piesaw bird. And there's a legend about how a Native American fought this bird and was able to, kill it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was huge. And you know what? Maybe they saw something.
Oh, absolutely. And maybe they could have killed the last of something. You know, it wasn't so long ago that this earth was populated with all kinds of animals that have been just killed off. And like we said before, you know, and you've said it on your own programming, we have only discovered 15% of life.
I know. This planet is so much
amazing.
Life, teeming with life.
Absolutely. It's such an exciting place to live and experience, you know.
I'd love to see one of these birds. It would be eerie. Somebody in Alaska was flying a Cessna, and a bird as big as the plane flew right next to it.
Wow.
That would be creepy.
Yeah, that would. Well, you wouldn't want to end up on a nest on some, like, mountain bluff.
Can you imagine the size of that nest?
Sitting over there with the eggs. No,
or
that
mama, wouldn't
be good.
Mama feeding her little birds, right?
Yeah, that's
chicks.
Right. That's
feeding
right.
them you.
Well, that's right. And, you know, this Thunderbird thing also fits in with the Mothman, because we can't
That's
say,
exactly right.
Yeah, we can't say that one is not the other. Another thing, too, with the Mothman is that you got to remember, it doesn't... We get these reports of what the Mothman looked like with eyes in the center of his chest, which is just so abnormal. I would propose perhaps that something up high was crinking its neck and looking downwards. And from that point of view, it appeared that the head was in the middle of
Could
the
Could it
chest.
Be like a barn owl, a big one?
With the Mothman prophecies?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I think this might be Draco-related. This might be a winged reptilian humanoid that's moving back and forth dimensionally, especially when there's a huge catastrophic event that took place like it did there, where so many lives are lost at the same time. You know, when you have a huge whole bunch of people like that dying at the same time, it rips a tear in the fabric of space so angels can come through and take you to the other side.
John, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about, the possible dangers of these creatures and some phone calls.